That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, folks, the following is a free preview of the Bob Seska Show After Party podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting our Patreon page for $10 per month at BobSeskaShow.com. Oh, and warning, the after party is definitely not safe for work.
Let us pray.
What about the dwarf? Worthless. Cut his throat.
Wait. Let's discuss this.
And then chop off his cock. We'll sell it for a fortune. The dwarf's cock has magic powers.
Wait. You can't just hand a dried cock to a merchant and expect him to pay for it. He has to know it came from a dwarf. And how could he know? Unless he sees the dwarf.
It will be a dwarf-sized cock.
Guess again.
Welcome to the after party.
Curl your hand around a frosty glass of vodka.
This is the Bob Seska Show.
The after party.
The Bob Seska Show.
Thought we were in the... down the same road to a shared destination. You never showed. I stood in the doorway many hours for the same. The assumptions we made. Held on for dear life. You stuck with your name. One way in New York City, but you never came. Took all of the evening to admit my mistake. Crosses my mind that the future may find you be worth.
I think this might be my favorite song right now. My favorite song of like the last few weeks at least. This is Bob Bradshaw. It's another Bob. Bob Bradshaw, The Assumptions We Make from American Echoes. That's the name of the album. Link in the description below. That's the after party. Hi, May 10, 2019, day 841 of the Trump crisis, day 3 of the constitutional crisis, day 543 until the 2020 presidential election.
32 years ago was my prom.
32 years ago was your prom?
Right? But 32 plus 18 is 50, right?
You're so old.
I know.
You're so,
I'm old.
We're so old.
32 years ago today, I met Bill.
Oh, Bill. Crazy coked up Bill with his crazy robot dance.
His and crazy... his extremely ginormously long dick. I took a picture while I was asleep and it was so big. I showed it to my girlfriend and she's like, oh my God, it looks like it's got an extension on it. I wish I still had it because he was really skinny. He was like a skinny teen man.
Why did it look like he had an extension on it?
Was it two different
colors or something?
I don't know. He was having a happy dream.
And that makes it look like his dick has an extension?
It just looked extra long.
Did you check to make sure it wasn't an extension? Did you give it a yank like Santa Claus's beard? Like
I gave it a pull.
And he didn't wake up. But I'm assuming, what he had like a a two-color dick. Like, it goes up.
Yeah, it was probably all miscolored, but you know,
he wasn't
the brightest bulb, and I should have known when I very first met him when I was like 15 years old. I had this huge crush on him because he was really cute. He was tall and blonde, and he just looked like a surfer kid, and he looked just like this guy. And if you go watch that Huey Lewis video, what's that Huey Lewis video?
Oh, The Power of Love. He was in the...
No, it's the other one. What's that? I have to go look for it.
I Want a New Drug.
No, it was the...
Heart of Rock and Roll?
Heart of Rock and Roll.
Okay.
It was a black and white video. And right. So there's this guy...
Do you like Huey Lewis on the news?
there's this guy who's got like blonde hair and he's just in it for a second. And I thought it was so Bill. Great. And so I went up to him. And I said, hey, are you in that Huey Lewis video? And he looked at me all vacant. He went, I don't know.
I don't know.
I should have known then. But 3 years later, I met him at prom.
He wasn't sure whether or not he was in a music video by a major 1980s recording artist.
But he was cute.
Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't. And he had a dick that looked like had an extension on it. So what you're saying, it wasn't a dwarf-sized cock, is what you're saying.
No.
Okay.
Excuse me for coughing. I have allergies, so pardon me if I cough. I'm going
to
cough.
Well, next time, you know what? You can take a picture of my dick whenever you want. You don't have to sneak around. I'm just saying. Not that there's anything remarkable. It doesn't look like I have an extension on my dick.
I'm not going to tell people about your dick.
Sad to say.
You can tell them. I'm not. Well, it's not my place.
We've already talked about how I have a curved dick.
It's like a banana dick.
And apparently this is a serious problem.
You have a banana dick.
What? In fact, it's yellow.
You know what? You should like...
It's yellow?
Halloween, yeah. For Halloween, you should paint it yellow and just walk around
that's
like,
a great
that's
idea.
Like a banana.
That's right. That's
all. Go over to my dad's house.
Knock on the door. Why are you not dressed up as anything, Bob? Oh, wait. Ken, you didn't see my dick. I've got my dick dressed up like a banana.
A banana.
But watching MSNBC is giving me a complex these days because it's all a bunch of commercials about how if you have
that curved dick.
You got to go see a doctor if you've got a curved dick. I never knew. I realized that was actually a thing.
You know, my mom had told me a long time ago, you know, as an adult, but, you know, my grandmother was only with one man. Yeah. And so she asked my mother... She knew my mom was with more than one man, and she's like, are men different?
Mm.
And my mom's like, well, yeah. And she said, you know, there's different sizes. And she goes, I was with one man who had a curved penis, and my grandma couldn't fucking get over it. She was like a sweet little Catholic woman. So she just couldn't believe that penises could be curved.
She probably had only ever seen one penis in her entire life.
Yeah, she'd only seen one. And she had three girls, so she never even had a boy.
Right. So she's amazed by the fact that there's a curve. It's like letting people know, oh, you know what? The earth is round. Yeah. And they're like, wow, mind blown.
You haven't played my soundbite yet, though.
Oh, I haven't? Oh, Pursuing the Vagenda of Manicide.
Pursuing the Vagenda of Manicide. Here's Kimberly. Okay,
it's not, now I feel it's like not as wrong. Pulse pounding without the music behind it, though,
pulse
I will
pounding.
Say.
We're talking about dicks and pulse pounding.
You know, talk about pulse pounding. Wake up first thing this morning.
Talk about pulse pounding. I just saw fucking Don Jr. come down my Twitter feed.
Oh,
he's a dick.
Oh my God. You said Don Jr. come. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God. We're just so
disgusting.
Gross. We're but so naughty.
Pulse pounding. The way you woke me up this morning, it was like sheer panic. You're like, Bob, I smell gas.
Well, I felt panicked.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and I got a story about that.
Well, you got to be careful because I have a story first about gas. You smelled gas in the house, and we'll eventually get to what it was or what wasn't, as the case may be. But you know, I'm a survivor. In fact, this is the first time
You're
today
such a survivor.
That I know I'm such a survivor. I'm like Cher. The first time I think I have ever spoken the words "I'm a survivor of a gas explosion." Was today. That was the first time I ever said that actual phrase. And it was to the maintenance guys who came over to check the gas odor in our apartment. And I never actually said that, but it's true. I am a survivor of a gas explosion in 1972 in Annandale, Virginia. Some workers were laying down the storm sewers in the brand new development that my parents moved us into. And as they were using their giant backhoe to churn up the ground, the idiots from the construction company churned up the gas line that was leading into all the houses in our cul-de-sac. And that obviously ruptured the gas line. And then so all of this natural gas flooded back through into all of the houses on the cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that it didn't run back through in the pipe itself. it went through the hole that the pipe was sitting in, you know, the tunnel that the pipe was sitting in. So it went directly back into the house. It didn't have to fight through the force of the gas that was already in the pipe. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was our neighbors, their house blew up. Everyone was killed.
Awful.
Yeah, terrible. My mom and I were the only ones home. My dad had gone to work. My brothers hadn't been born yet. So, and I was not even a year old. And my mom smelled the gas. And first she ran downstairs into the utility room, closed the door to the utility room. And then when she came up, already, I think the gas pressure, and of course, this is all vague. I don't know the full details of the story. But the gas pressure had already blown a hole in the side of the house. Wow. And so she was able to get me out because the door was jammed. For some reason, she couldn't open the door. And in fact, the same thing happened to our neighbors. And the reason why their house actually blew up, killing everyone inside, was because the door was jammed there. And the mom in the neighbor's house was trying to kick the door open with her shoe. And what they say is that one of the nails on the sole of her shoe, back in the old days when they used to have nails in soles of shoes, caused a spark against the slate foyer floor.
Wow.
And that's what ignited the gas. Yeah. Wow. So they all died. In fact, the mom survived a little bit, you know, maybe a matter of a half an hour or something like that, but like third degree burns all over her body. But but my mom was able to get me out of the house. And what was crazy is she ran across the front. She'll to this day, she talks about this, where she ran across the front lawn in her bare feet and it was covered with glass because all the windows and everything had blown out, and she didn't get a single cut on her feet.
Wow.
Amazing. So we actually survived. My dad called. There was a whole, obviously, a lawsuit and inquisition and everything. And in fact, the lawsuit helped pay for my college education. Thank you very much.
Wow.
So at least there was that. Something positive came out. In fact, it paid for my college education and my brother's college education. Wow. Maybe not the best plan to finance your college education.
Yeah, don't blow up your house to pay.
But no, don't rely on that as a business model for going to college.
Well, you know, when the maintenance guy came.
Yeah.
You were in your office, so I answered the door, and I started explaining to him immediately that I smelled it, but I wasn't sure, and that I just wanted to be sure.
Did he say back to you, "He who smelt it, dealt it"?
No, but wow. The way he addressed me and the way he was looking at me as if I was an idiot, mm-hmm. and it was pissing me off. And I made sure to say, you know, that I just wanted to make sure because it is gas, and, you know, you don't want to play around with that. And he just stood there staring at me, and he's like, "It's just a cooking smell." And it's not a cooking smell. And then you came out, and then he took it seriously. And that fucking pissed me off. And it was very, very, very subtle. He was writing me off as if I didn't know what I was talking about. And, you know, and then you came out and you made your comment and everything. Oh, then he starts doing all the testing.
Yeah.
But he just stood there looking at me like, "Woman, what are you talking about?" And it was, yeah, like, I could feel the rage inside me. Because I just thought, why are you standing here? And I asked him like 3 times, is that something that you can, because he was holding something and I didn't know if it was like a walkie-talkie or if it was one of those things that I figured it was a machine to detect any kind of leak. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't even answer me. But then you came out and he immediately starts unraveling it and testing it. And
yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
So the man comes out and it's legitimate. But when the woman talks about it, she doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about.
And I'm convinced that tool that he was using was fake. Like it's just a fake cosplay.
Well, I don't know.
Like,
because
it was like, but it was like something from the Ghostbusters. You know, it's like something that.
But he did put it up to the oven or to the stove and he turned the gas on and then it made a noise. So I do think that it was a legitimate thing, but it was just, it pissed me off because, you know, women are not taken seriously. My mother, and so I talked to my mother after this and I explained what happened. And of course, she's all very, you know, familiar with this. And there was this time when she was selling cars and this man referred to her as little lady. And she was a car salesperson. So she just fucking nailed him. She got him to pay like $5,000 over.
Yeah.
And the way that she addressed him and did everything she did, she was talking about torque and all this stuff. And cause she knew her shit as yeah. she's like a type A personality. Who's like she was a straight A student. She's always so neat and perfect. Everything she yeah. does is fucking perfect. So, you know, she did her thing and she said like he had nothing to say to me and he just kept like yes ma'aming me after, I don't know. She didn't like scold him,
mm-hmm.
but I guess she just, you know, impressed the shit out of him and then took him to the cleaners.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
So there's a little message for, I doubt there's too many older misogynist men listening to this, but yeah. in case you think you're being cute when you say little lady. You might get fucked over by that little lady.
Yeah, and you're totally fired up with the agenda of Manicide today, because last night we watched on YouTube, but of course now we have a Roku thing, so we can watch YouTube on our TV. Mm-hmm. Isn't that fancy? It's like something millennials all listening in are like, Bob, we've been able to do this for years. What are you talking about? Which is all amazing. You can get YouTube on the television. Striking and shocking. But no, we were watching old episodes of E! True Hollywood Story. Mm-hmm. And
there's so many of them, and I can't wait to see them.
We, of course, watched the Brady Bunch one, and then we watched the Three's Company one.
Last night, yeah.
Where it was basically like, wow, Suzanne Summers sure is a bitch. I mean, that was the drama that they were really amplifying.
Well, I mean, look, I remember, I've seen this years ago, and I remember, you know, Joyce DeWitt, I remember watching this, and it was the late 90s, because they mentioned, I think, 98. Mm-hmm. And so it was like not too long after 98, because Norman Fell had passed away after his last interview, which I guess was this show.
Yeah.
So so I remember like thinking that Joyce DeWitt seemed bitter, and that what's her name? Suzanne Summers was just nothing but greedy. So now that we watch this again, I would say, I don't think Joyce DeWitt, I think Joyce DeWitt was totally justified in her feelings. Mm-hmm. Because it sounds like they were just fucking condescending, misogynist, sexist producers.
Yeah, very much the 20th century television producing group. You know what I mean? Like a bunch of old men, looks like World War II generation with all their sort of old school concepts about how the world works.
And, they said, I think it was Priscilla Barnes who said that they would talk to them as if they were parental. You know, like, now children.
Right.
But Suzanne Summers, you know, she was pissed off because she was getting maybe $600,000 a year. And John Ritter, both her and Joyce DeWitt were getting about $600,000 a year. And John Ritter was getting like $1 million.
Yeah.
So I think she was right to go fight for more money. But the way she did it, mm-hmm. I think, was very damaging to the cast and to herself, because she was called greedy. And I'm not going to call her greedy. I think she was fighting for what she deserved.
Yeah.
But I also think the way she did it and the way she handled it was juvenile. And she had her stupid husband, who I can't stand. I can't even remember his name. I never can remember his name.
Oh yeah. He was a Canadian talk show host. Yeah. Charlie something.
No, not Charlie. It wasn't Charlie.
I don't know.
I can't remember his name.
I'll check it out.
Go look it up. But yeah, so he took over as her manager. And once that happened, they just figured, because she had all this instant fame, and that's what she was after. Alan Hamill.
Yeah, see, Alan Hamill, close to Charlie. There you go. It's amazing I was able to come up with that.
Well, you know, she wanted fame. Joyce DeWitt and John Ritter wanted to act. So she got what she wanted, and then she figured, oh, I'm just like the shit. And that was her problem. I don't have a problem with her going after more money, but it was just her whole idea of like, you will bow to me because I am the famous. It's like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, she was a little bit, I just think that the way they treated all of them, including John Ritter, but especially the women, it sounds like, you know, Joyce DeWitt at the end, she said, look, when the lights went up and we went to perform, it was just exquisite.
Yeah.
But you know, all the other shit, the drama, the way they were treated, the way the show ended, and the actors were, cause they were going to do that spinoff with only Jack, and nobody told anybody.
It was terrible. Yeah, I remember that show was terrible.
It was terrible, and they told the other actors there was a hiatus, but they could come back to only find out that, you know, there was filming going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And that they weren't in the show. So that was just all bullshit. But it's just fascinating. It's fun to watch those shows.
It was a little bit of misogyny. Obviously, that was the case. Or I don't want to say misogyny. Like sexism. Chauvinism. I think Joyce DeWitt was calling it chauvinism. Yeah.
And sexism.
And the other side of it, though, was the way they defined that three-person group was with John Ritter as being the lead.
Yeah.
And of course, in a lead scenario, the lead is always going to get more money than the other cast. But the cast should have been an ensemble cast. Yeah. It should have been a three-person spotlight. You know what I mean?
I wonder, though,
where they all should have been earning similar amounts of money.
Yeah.
It's the same way with Cheers. Like Ted Danson was the main guy. He's the lead on Cheers, but it was really an ensemble show where they should have had more parity between the actors.
Yeah.
As far as their a per episode fee went and their back end and all that crap. But so that, I mean, but the way Suzanne Summers handled it, I thought was really,
it was poor. And yeah, you know, I think it was Alan Hamill was giving her really bad advice. He was not somebody who had been in show business. He was, I guess, like he came along and helped out her manager until he felt, okay, now I got it.
Yeah.
And then they fired the manager, and then that's when they decided to pull all these stupid stunts, pretending that she was had a broken, well, I don't know if she had a broken rib. She said she had a broken rib and she missed work, but she was still out performing in her other show with no brace. So it's like, you know, she was supposedly wearing, she said she was wearing a back brace, but she wasn't wearing a back brace. She was a liar. She was just playing this negotiation game, but it was not beneficial to the other cast members. I mean, I imagine if, I think in Friends, there was some point where maybe all of the cast members band together,
yeah,
and said, we want $1 million per episode.
I think that's the way it was. The Simpsons did that on several occasions,
but see,
as did Seinfeld.
That doesn't hurt the other cast. That's when all of the cast members, like, we're standing together in solidarity,
yeah,
and we're not going to fuck up, you know, shooting, and we're not going to do unless it's like we're all agreed that we're not going to hurt anybody else's. I mean, of course, they'd have to deal with the camera people, yeah, and all that. But still, it's like, it's like, but I mean, she just didn't handle it well.
Well, sure. And you get to that level of fame, though, because remember, this, we're talking about 1979, 1980, yeah, around there, where there was only three networks. And when you talk about a number one show or a top five show, which Three's Company was, mm-hmm, you're talking about massive visibility, massive celebrity on a scale that we can't really truly, yeah, appreciate now, given the way television has really been diversified.
Well, you can get, and famous on YouTube.
So. Yeah, diversified across all these different platforms, right? Mm-hmm. And so the level of celebrity that the cast of Three's Company achieved at that point in time must have been just absolutely mind-blowing, because what they were saying is it was instantaneous. And what happened with Suzanne Summers is, I think that level of fame really eked into her, yeah, ability to judge,
yeah,
how
she
should be proceeding.
It.
You kind of get this sense of invincibility when,
right,
you get that level of fame. I mean,
right,
even, you know, I just remember back after Napster Bad. I did this cartoon in the year 2000, May of 2000, and I was getting 10 million downloads a day or something ridiculous for this one cartoon. And it was not even close to being the level of celebrity of Three's Company. But I'm saying this to illustrate the fact that in the wake of that, I felt invincible. Mm-hmm. I felt like any idea I came up with is the greatest idea. I mean, it was intoxicating. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, things happen that measure you back or cut back your level of ego, and you kind of recalibrate. Some people are unable to, mm-hmm, recalibrate.
Well, again, she wanted that fame, as, yeah, as opposed to both of the other two actors who were a little intimidated by it. I'm sure they handled it okay, but, you know, Joyce DeWitt specifically said, I'm a very private person. So, mm-hmm, it was very uncomfortable for me, where Suzanne Summers loved it.
Yeah.
And so, because I think she loved it, she exploited it,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yeah. And what was really entertaining about watching that True Hollywood story is the seriousness with which so many of the people were taking it. And it was such a light farce. What do they, yeah, call it? A bedroom farce?
Yeah, bedroom.
Bedroom farce.
Bedroom parody.
Bedroom something.
Something like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was just like, and they were talking about how they were repeating plot lines,
right,
you know, and which is something that
after 8 years, they,
yeah,
because they were saying that in the initial episodes they were trying to hide a puppy from the Ropers, and then they, like, toward the end they were hiding a kitten from Mr. Furley.
Yeah. Right. And that happens in a lot of shows that last a long time. I mean, I was
just losing story ideas.
Yeah. And in fact, Charlie Pierce and I were talking about MASH on Twitter this past week. And one of the things that occurred to me as we were talking about MASH, because Charlie Pierce evidently hates the finale of MASH. Which is just like, who hates the finale of MASH?
Well, I didn't hate it, but I hated the Hawkeye story. I hated that
so
much.
I love that story.
Well, I mean, just a girl, and it was upsetting to me.
I mean, my God, Kimberly, it was a baby!
I know.
It was a baby.
That's the thing. It killed me.
Wasn't a chicken, spoiler warning. It was a baby, for God's sake.
So then it's okay.
Yeah.
I am...
But Charlie hated that.
Killing horse, so I really shouldn't be bothered by it.
That's true. He was saying that the finale was everything that MASH had become that was bad. Like, everything that, you know, the Alan Alda consciousness eked into the comedy of the show and kind of dampened it down. And I agree that in those last four or five seasons, the show really, I would say maybe the last three our four seasons, the comedy became really tepid and watered down from where it was originally. And even into the Mike Farrell, Harry Morgan years, the comedy really was sharp up until a certain point when Alan Alda took over sort of the creative consulting aspect of the show and really watered it down. But nevertheless, where was I going with this? MASH. Oh, yeah. MASH repeated a storyline over and over again. And it got to the point where I've seen that. I've seen every episode of that show. As many times as you've watched Sex and the City all the way through, I think I've seen the episodes of MASH through twice as many times. I used to have them on cassette tapes, just the audio-only cassette tapes. And I would listen to the cassette that I would just record off of a television with my boombox back before there were VCRs. And there were shows
obsessive.
I mean, I know. What can I say?
You're more obsessive than me.
Very much so. But the one plot line that they used to repeat on MASH all the time was that that thing where one of the cast members would ask a favor of someone, and then that cast member would ask a favor of someone else, and then someone else, and then someone else. And so in order for the first person to get what they needed, all of these other people needed to do all these favors. It was like a chain of favors or something like that to this one cast member. And they did that, I don't know how many times. They must have done that half a dozen times on MASH, that particular plot line. So it does happen. And you're talking about 22 episodes a season at that time. I mean, now, like a 12-episode pickup is like a bonanza, like a gigantic payday. And but back then, man, you do... Three's Company lasted 8 years?
8 years, I think, yeah.
8 seasons, 22 episodes. My God, that is a lot of fucking television, especially with the modern context. So it's no wonder they repeated episodes. Speaking of old school television, we're starting the after party early today because you're going on Alyssa Milano's podcast today.
Yeah, it's funny because I was, you know, she had asked me a while back, and we've just all been trying to, I've been dealing with her assistant, and so we've been trying to figure out when and everything, so we finally agreed to a time, and then so I said, okay, well, will we be doing this on phone or Skype? And she's like, I'll be sending an engineer to your location.
An engineer? What?
And I was just like, oh, okay. So, anyway, so yeah, after this podcast, I imagine somebody's going to come to our home, and I don't know how it's going to work. Like, I don't know if I'm just going to...
It's going to be Tony Danza. Angela, Angela, there's something wrong with Mona. There's something wrong with your microphone, Angela. He's going to just call you
Angela. I don't
know
if, like, I'm... Because, you know, they asked me, are there any particular topics you want to focus on? So I gave them a list. And then I don't know if we're going to, like, go through those topics, and then Alyssa's going to, you know, add on later if she's going to be... there for the interview while we're, I have no idea. All I do know is I interviewed a woman named Kate Kelly a couple of weeks ago, just after the ERA hearing. Kate was there, and she's a lawyer, so she was able to, you know, offer up some interesting insight. But anyway, I know Kate and I were invited at the same time, so I imagine we're both going to be on the same show, but I doubt we're going to have like a roundtable kind of discussion. It's probably just going to be like, you know, Alyssa will talk with me and she'll talk with Kate and then she'll splice it together.
Right, right. Well, good luck. That's exciting. She's actually sending an engineer.
Pardon me?
I love that they're sending an engineer.
I just like, we're going to send an engineer to your location.
And again.
It's so formal.
The first thing I thought of as soon as you told me that they're sending an engineer is I thought, budget.
Yeah.
They have a budget.
They have a better budget than I do.
A podcasting budget. What an amazing concept that is.
Well, you know, she was just Alyssa was featured in Washington Post, and she commented about how people, you know, say, oh, you're getting all this money from Soros. And she's like, no, I facilitate my
from
activism.
Soros.
Yeah.
Really?
Of course. I facilitate all of my activism through my acting work. So this woman who I mean, I know she's got some critics out there, even from the liberal side. And, you know, I mean, she's like for Biden, which I feel like, look, I'm not going to criticize anybody. I'd be a little worried if she was for Tulsi. But I mean, no matter who she's for, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because this woman does more. And I mean, look, Biden is not my favorite, but I certainly don't hate him. I just would prefer to see someone else. But I'll vote for him enthusiastically if he's the nominee, because I will enthusiastically pretty much vote for anybody except for Bernie. I will vote for him, but not enthusiastically.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, if Biden becomes the guy, I know I'm going to feel a certain amount of like hope and excitement. And, you know, if he is the nominee, but going back to Alyssa, I respect her so much because she literally puts her money where her mouth is. Her acting pays for her activism. She goes to these different states and she shows up to hearings. She takes people to vote and she records it. I mean, she's not just, you know, half-assed. She doesn't just, you know, write articles. And I'm talking about, like, I do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't have her money. I can't run around the entire fucking country like she does and just puts it out there. And obviously she's asked to speak a lot. And, but I mean, she gets things done.
Right.
So, I mean, and of course, you know, the whole ERA thing, which I discovered in 2012, because I was the one who got to introduce that to her. And she, because of her and her fame, I know that, I mean, it's not because of her that it ratified, excuse me, in Nevada or Nevada. It's called Nevada. It's
is not it Nevada. Nevada?
Yeah. And in Illinois, that wasn't because
which is pronounced Illinois.
Yeah. But it's not because of Alyssa. That was because of the people who worked really hard on the ground mm-hmm. in those states.
Yep.
But Alyssa has definitely put so much attention on it that, like, there was in the LA Times yesterday, there was I think it was an editorial board recommending the ERA. So, you know, and Jerry Nadler did that hearing, which we hadn't had in 36 years. Mm-hmm. So there was all kinds of things that have happened. And I know it's because of her. She, you know, she didn't start Me Too, but she started the Me Too movement.
Is there a nickname for Jerry Nadler like Nads? I think we should start that. Nads. Because he's got balls, man. He's totally going after Trump. He's got balls. He's got balls of iron.
And you know
that
what?
Guy.
He was last year when I went to that shadow hearing by whose name I'm going to. Oh, it's a woman and I can't think of her name and I could see her face. But anyway.
Christine Blasey Ford?
No. She's in the Senate.
Oh, okay.
Or a House. Yeah. I can't think of Carolyn Maloney.
Okay.
So Carolyn Maloney, you know, had this shadow hearing because she couldn't get a legitimate hearing. And that's where I met Alyssa, and Alyssa gave this moving speech and all that. But Jerry was there, and he was there the whole time.
Nads.
So he, you know, he impresses me. I want to say something, though, about him.
Okay.
You know, I am on the rampage with the white male's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, Jerry Nadler is an older white man, and he is one of the most progressive men in the whole party. He, you know, I mean, say what you want about him, and I'm sure he has flaws, but this guy is showing up.
Yeah.
He's showing up for women. He's showing up for the Trump situation and, you know, all that's going on there. I know they have to, you know, play a certain game and they have to adhere to certain rules. Mm-hmm. And so I believe they're trying to do everything by the book, and everybody in the country is going, "Get impeached now."
Yeah, right.
And they're talking specifically to Nancy, but you know, I'm hoping that she's got the long game, and I don't know. But either way, I think that Jerry Nadler is an older white male mm-hmm. who's an incredibly progressive older white male.
The more I think about this entire impeachment strategy, the more I like it, the more I'm on board with it.
And, I know, you know, Sarah Kendzior is not.
Well, she's not, but I mean, that's okay. I appreciate, and obviously yeah. I was on the hard line
right.
side of things for a good long
well,
time.
It's hard
and
for
I still
me
think
to decide.
I am. I think I'm still on that hard line side. I still think to a certain degree, I'm on the Sarah Kendzior side because I really believe it's something that needs to happen. It's mandatory as far as I'm concerned. What I agree with on the Nancy Pelosi side of this is that there needs to be a process.
Yeah. And yeah. I agree with that. I mean, I saw Sarah Kendzior had tweeted something and, you know, she was saying that she didn't believe that she was sincere or whatever. And so when I, you know, I mean, I certainly appreciate both the two women of Gaslit Nation, Sarah Kendzior and
Andrea Chalupa.
Yeah, Andrea Chalupa. So I appreciate them. Those women are freaking incredible.
They are.
And I'm kind of at this place where I absolutely want to believe that Nancy Pelosi has a long game. And mm-hmm. I get that the stakes are so high that they want to make every move count and to be extremely careful so that when they do go in for the kill, it's not a miss and then we're fucked.
Right, right.
So, I mean, it does, you know, we're dealing with that horse in the hospital and he's, you know, nobody knows. I mean, we can expect some things.
Yeah.
But he's very unpredictable.
Well, that's, yeah, you could say that. That's, unpredictable is what brings his, that's what's going to bring the entire Trump empire down.
I hope so.
He's just making it up as he goes along. You There's know, no long-term strategy.
Unnerving. And, you know, talking about, you know, this agenda of manicide, you had mentioned to me last night, you and your agenda of manicide need to go after the Trump administration for this. This bill that they're going to let. What's the deal?
What happened was is there was a ruling by a federal judge in Michigan that overturned the ban on female genital mutilation in this country for being unconstitutional. Now, there's some sort of commerce clause problem with all of that. It's like a commerce issue is what was cited by the judge. But the fact is that Donald Trump and the Bill Barr Justice Department are no longer going to defend that ban in court. So what they're going to do, Donald Trump is allowing the ban on female genital mutilation to expire. Yeah. That's what's happening. So basically, you can say that Donald Trump wants to legalize female genital mutilation in this country, in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not talking about...
He loves women. Yeah. Nobody loves women more than he does.
We're not talking about some radical Islamic nation somewhere where it's just seriously oppressive and terrible. We're talking about the United States, where there are 500,000 women who are susceptible to this practice.
Yeah. So there's this situation that's going on with the genital mutilation. There's also what's going on in Georgia. I believe in Georgia, if you want an abortion, it's like a felony. There's also Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
That would make it a felony. And they tried to sneak. There was that whole thing yesterday, which hell broke loose on the Alabama Senate floor.
Yeah, you want to hear that? This is what happened on the Alabama Senate floor. Was it the Senate? It happened in the Alabama Senate?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Alabama Republicans trying to ram through an anti-abortion bill, criminalizing abortion with up to 99 years in prison. Mm-hmm. This is the Republican agenda. Make no mistake about what their agenda is on abortion. It's not just to make it illegal. They want to start punishing people. They want to criminalize abortion and throw women and doctors in jail.
Yeah.
That's their goal in all of this. It's not just about saving the fetuses. It's punishing anyone who wants to abort a fetus. That's their entire goal. So what happened was here, they tried to do just like a voice vote. Suddenly and without warning on the floor of this Alabama chamber. And all hell broke loose. Mm-hmm.
By Representative Collins, relating to abortion, committee amendment pending.
Motion Shambles. Table.
All those in favor say aye.
Any opposed?
Motion passes. Committee amendment is tabled.
Mr. President, there was no motion. There was no motion.
There was a motion. He made a motion.
He didn't even make a motion, Mr. President.
Hold on, excuse me.
He did not make a motion.
He made a motion to table.
He did not make a motion. There was no motion from the other side.
He made a motion to table. Senator.
Heck no. He didn't even make a motion.
He made a motion to table.
What was the motion made?
The motion was made.
You just
excuse me, Senator Chambliss. You're recognized.
I don't care what the chair is about.
Thank you, Mr.
He did not make a motion. Wow.
In response to the number of abortions performed this year versus the rape and incest.
Mr. President,
So what they want to do here is they want to punish people who have abortions with up to 99 years in prison. And the way they're going to achieve that is to do some ridiculous parliamentary end game or end around where they cheat and they get a voice vote through without making a motion for any sort of vote being on the table. Mm-hmm. That's how they plan to do this. Meanwhile, the lieutenant governor there said point blank today that he's trying to kill Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. Now, good luck with that, because even some of the conservative justices on the Supreme Court, I mean, for fuck's sake, Scalia, when he was still alive, was basically saying that Roe was established law. Mm-hmm. John Roberts believes that, too. So this Republican notion that Roe v. Wade is on the table because of the makeup of the Supreme Court is kind of false. Although I say all of that and I go, well, there's still a chance. And
yeah,
that's what's scary about
still a chance. Then, OK, yeah. So there's that. Then there's another guy in Ohio mm-hmm. who sponsored a bill that defies science by claiming contraceptives cause abortion.
Yeah.
And so it's that ectopic pregnancies in which the embryo implants somewhere other than the uterus.
Oh, that's
usually
so dumb.
The fallopian tube can be fixed by simply sticking the errant embryo into the pregnant person's uterus. So there's that.
Good luck.
And then there's, I don't know, there's like a number of abortion ban stories where, God, I think it's in Georgia that if you find out you're pregnant or if you miscarry, you can go to jail. If you try to leave the state to get an abortion, you can go to jail.
Right.
And so I have to say that, you know, yeah, I have agenda of manicide and all that stuff, and I'm angry, and I am. But I feel very similar to the way I felt during the Kavanaugh hearings, because I feel like, once again, women specifically, because men are under attack too. This is not just a women's issue, but the women are the one who are going to suffer the most. Men have a certain amount of stake in this. I mean, you can say if you're in a couple, if, like, let's just say you and I were younger and I was able to get pregnant, we wouldn't want a kid. And if I lived in a state that I didn't, if it would be an unwanted pregnancy, and you wouldn't want one.
Yeah.
So we would both want to end the pregnancy. And if we lived in a state like Ohio or something, and I didn't even know, in, you know, five, most women in Ohio, there's the bill that bans abortion. I think it's after your five, I think after 6 weeks, and then there's no rape or incest exception.
Mm-hmm.
So most women don't even know they're pregnant until, you know, 7, 8, 9 weeks.
Are you saying that a fetus is just a missed period? Is that what you're saying, Kimberly Johnson, you baby killer, you?
And then there's these horrible stories coming that, and I wrote about this.
Well, wait. We don't want to go past what we were just talking about, because there was a bit of an incident on BBC. I believe it was today or last night with
Ben Shapiro.
Ben Shapiro, yeah, where Ben Shapiro was asked by this BBC host, who is this guy's name? Andrew Neil, about this Georgia anti-abortion law. That is, it is true. He calls it barbaric, and it's absolutely barbaric. Mm-hmm. Most women don't even know they're pregnant by 6 weeks. They don't even realize it. And then when they finally do realize it, oh, too late.
Right.
Sorry, you're stuck. Unless you go to a different state, and even then you can be arrested for going to a different state. Mm-hmm. So here's Ben Shapiro, and the Shapiro bot. Voice. Yeah, I mean, just turning into a blue screen of death with his... he needs to reinstall his drivers or something like that. Here's Ben Shapiro on the BBC.
Why is it that a bill banning abortions after a woman has been pregnant for 6 weeks is not a return to the dark ages? What's your answer?
My answer is something called science. Human life exists at conception. It ought to be protected. Now, back to my question to you. You purport to be an objective journalist.
Is that really Ben Shapiro? Is that one of those text-to-voice things? That's what I was curious.
Kristen Johnston asked if he was inhaling helium, and I'm like, yeah, he does every day, all day.
Yeah, Brian Lynch asked if his owner Dave wouldn't let him have a hula hoop for Christmas. This is obviously an Alvin and the Chipmunks reference. Yeah. Here, let's start this again.
Why is it that a bill banning abortions after a woman has been pregnant for 6 weeks is not a return to the dark ages? What's your answer?
My answer is something called science. Human life exists at conception. It ought to be protected. Now, back to my question to you. You purport to be an objective journalist. BBC purports to be an objective down-the-middle network. It obviously is not. It never has been. And you, as a journalist, are proceeding to call one side of the political aisle ignorant, barbaric, and sending us back to the dark ages. Why don't you just say that you're on the left? Is this so hard for you? Why can't you just be honest? It's a serious question.
Mr. Shapiro, if you only knew how ridiculous that statement is, you wouldn't have said it.
Yeah, you know what? It turns out... turns out Andrew Neil is... Andrew Neil is basically like the BBC equivalent of Bill O'Reilly. He is so far right. And what Ben Shapiro doesn't understand here, the Shapiro bot 3000 doesn't get it, that in England and everywhere else in the world, members of the press, members of the television press especially, ask challenging questions regardless of where their ideology lands. So that's what Andrew Neil was doing. He was asking Ben Shapiro a challenging question. And of course, Ben Shapiro, these fucking whiners.
Yeah, he's basically taking MAGA to the BBC. Yes, and BBC's like, huh?
The whining.
But, whining.
The thing that's so upsetting about this law, specifically in Ohio, is there was this story that just came out that a man raped an 11-year-old girl.
Jesus.
And the heartbeat law requires her to have this baby. But there's no law that protects her welfare once it's born.
Yeah.
None.
Exactly. Well, that's what Ben Shapiro goes on to justify is the science says that the life cycle begins at conception. But I guess according to Ben Shapiro, it also ends at birth.
Yeah.
Because anything after birth, You know, we've got babies dying in cages at the border. I don't hear Ben Shapiro screaming
nothing,
out
you know,
about that.
I'm so sick and tired of hearing, don't these Republicans know? Yes, they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. They're not stupid. You know, this guy in Ohio who's talking about this,
ectopic pregnancies. Yeah.
I can't say for sure that I know, but what I do know is this is all about controlling women. Whether or not he understands how birth control works or ectopic pregnancies or anything, you know, to say that you could just go and put the baby back in the uterus and everything's super, you know, super cool. This just tells me, and I've seen it for many years now, they don't give a shit. Doesn't matter what the truth is. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
They have an agenda and they're fulfilling that, you know, and so I think it's a mistake for people to ask those questions. Instead of asking, is this guy stupid? Post something with some information that will help educate someone who truly doesn't know. Mm-hmm. Instead of just wasting your time saying, I get very angry. You know, it's like the angry feminist thing. Yes, I'm the angry fucking feminist.
You're angry about this stuff? I didn't realize.
But it's
that.
Like when I see it, I start getting really picky with how it's handled on social media. And yep. I mean, I do make my jokes because sometimes I feel like I don't even know what to fucking say. So I'm not saying don't ever have a flippant attitude or whatever, but I just time after time after time after time, I see people commenting and they're like, is this guy dumb? Does he know anything? It's like, oh my God, don't ask. That is wasting time. If you're going to spend time on social media, be more productive most of the time.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, yes, we can, you know, make fun of them or say a joke or, you know, whatever, however you want to make fun of Derp Jr. or whatever it is. But I think there's always an opportunity to educate. You know, I don't engage with trolls except when I think other people are watching.
Yeah.
And then I try to educate.
Yep.
Instead of, I don't try to convince the troll.
No.
That's ridiculous. I try to convince the onlookers who don't know any different.
Yeah, it's a way to get the framing out there.
Yeah.
It's a platform upon which you can, you know, get some sort of clever thought or some sort of idea into the heads of the people who follow you, not necessarily the person you're responding
to. Right, because almost every time they're not going to listen to you.
Yep. So what was I going to add here? By the way, that Alabama Senate thing, and it was the Senate in Alabama, so you're right about that. That vote has been delayed until next week. So I mean, because it could very easily pass, and they know it's going to pass.
According to the Democratic woman who was speaking yesterday, she's like, we know this is going to pass.
Yeah.
We just want the respect of doing this properly.
Yeah. So Alabama is about ready to pass a bill that criminalizes abortion with 99 years in prison. And so and obviously that's going to get challenged in court. And but until there's a stay on that law, if it actually gets signed by the governor, et cetera, until there is a stay on blocking that bill in the courts, that's going to be the case. So if someone gets an abortion in Alabama, goodbye.
Yeah.
So I hope you enjoy prison for 99 years. It's staggering what's going on here. I mean, what's really happening here between the red states and the blue states is the red states are becoming these oppressive, fascistic zones of the country where you just don't want to go. You talk about no-go zones. Yeah. Remember that hysteria that was going on about the no-go zones? Well, these red states are now going to be no-go zones. If you're anyone who's maybe under the age of 60 and whose skin tone might be just a little more than a little darker than eggshell. Or a little light, yeah, I should say, a little lighter than eggshell is what I meant to say. And that's what it's really going to be, a kind of an apartheid thing or a self-imposed apartheid thing with conservative pro-Trump red hat America, where, you know, you're going to be able to live fine lives with excellent standards of living, with a social safety net and all of those things in the blue states. And then what's going to happen is the red states are going to economically start to collapse, and either they're going to have to make an adjustment to become more blue, or they're just going to start complaining that whoever the Democratic leader of the nation is at the federal level, like say a Democratic president or a Democratic Congress, they're going to be blamed for not helping the red states and bringing jobs and bringing freedom and security to red states.
Right now, I'm kind of processing it. I'm angry, but I'm not at that stage where I'm raging angry. I'm kind of like, when I was watching the Kavanaugh hearings, I was completely I felt beaten up.
Yeah.
I felt like I was just laying there helpless.
Like, it's not our world. Like, this, we're in some
sort
of...
Yeah, like, I don't even know how to process this at this point.
Yeah.
I need a few days. I need to figure out and find what my stance... I mean, obviously, I know my stance on this, but there's... It's just sometimes it's so difficult. When Trump became president, I really didn't even focus on feminism for, like, a year. Mm-hmm. And I didn't talk about the ERA. And the ERA passed in 2017 in Nevada. Or it was ratified. But it was just so overwhelming for me to deal with Trump and all that we were seeing and experiencing. So I was unable to kind of find my voice with feminism, even though I had established my voice. I lost it because I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I was literally in shock. And so I'm not surprised at anything that's happened right now, but I'm certainly shocked at how they're going about it, and I'm shocked that it's happening. Again, shocked but not surprised. It's only shocking because I just don't understand how this is going on. I don't understand how this is going on in America.
It's a mass
like
delusion.
People like Ben Shapiro are speaking about this on a global stage, and I think, you know, I don't even have to fucking deal with this. I'm never going to get pregnant. I'm done. Any fear of getting pregnant is long gone.
Yeah.
I am an older woman now, and I don't have to worry. But I can't help but be... I feel like this is personal.
Yep.
Even though I don't have to deal with it specifically.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, this is all part of the national emergency. And, you know, part of the national emergency is just this level of delusion. I mean, just millions and millions of people. 62 million people, upwards of that number, have been deceived and have been willing in many cases to be deceived into supporting this guy, into supporting this agenda. I was talking about this on the free show yesterday. It might have been the post-mortem show. We were talking about how these are all policies that are going to negatively impact the people who support them. It's just amazing to me. I mean, talk about healthcare, for example. These are all people who either have nothing to do with Obamacare other than reaping the benefits of its consumer protections.
Yeah.
I mean, regardless, I mean, people don't know this. This is just maddening that people don't know this. People don't know that the Affordable Care Act created consumer protections for everyone who mm-hmm. has health insurance, mm-hmm. not just people who have health insurance through the exchanges
right.
or through healthcare.gov. It's for everyone. And you take away the Affordable Care Act and everyone's insurance is going to become much shittier.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, red states. Good luck, red hats. You did this to yourselves. Your insurance policies are going to suck right along with everyone else's. It's absolute madness. Meanwhile, they're cheering for Donald Trump and his fucking stupid trade war with China. Stupid China.
China!
Or as Donald Trump said yesterday.
Vagina!
I was doing this. You know.
China! China! Vagina!
I don't know. I don't know why that's so fun, but it kind of is.
So you.
And then Jason Brozka suggested I add this one.
Jitties!
Yeah, Trump saying titties too.
Titties, vagina.
Yeah, I don't know why there was a rim shot in there somewhere, but
vagina, titties.
Thought I'd break up the seriousness there for a second, but he's in this trade war with China and he's monkeying around with tariffs. I mean, not only is he monkeying around with tariffs, but then he's tweeting shit and then deleting the tweets.
Yeah,
like he did this whole series of tweets this morning about the tariffs. He's like, oh, there's no need to rush into China talks after the tariffs hit. Blah blah blah. And then the fucking, oh my God, the stock market goes bananas. I mean, in a bad way. I mean, this was like one of these days.
This is an outrage. I demand an investigation. Turn those machines back on. Turn those machines back on.
One of those days. One of those days with the stock market, thanks to Donald Trump. You know, this economic wizard who totally didn't just luck into a decent economy thanks to Barack Obama.
Right.
You know, 8 years of Barack Obama. This guy's been in office for just over two.
Well, I mean, just let's look at Bush.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all you got to do is look at every single fucking chart of economic indicators, mm-hmm. and it'll show you that this is a trend that started with Barack Obama in about March of 2009, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? And then Donald Trump takes all the credit for
right.
it because he's fucking Donald Trump. Okay.
Just unbelievable.
But he did. He followed through on his threat to increase tariffs on an additional $200 billion worth of Chinese goods to take steps towards taxing nearly all Chinese imports. No wonder the stock market took a shit today. But this is good news. Going back to impeachment real quick. 45% of Americans
right.
now support
right,
impeaching
right.
Trump. Up 5 percentage points.
The economy will really make them want to support impeachment.
Yeah. Well, that's the fucked up thing about all of this. I know. You know, the economy's doing well.
Yeah, we all have to suffer before people fucking wake up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because people are only motivated when they're personally uncomfortable.
But I mean, the only reason why Donald Trump is still hovering at around 40% is because of the fucking economy. Yeah. If it wasn't for the Obama economy keeping this guy afloat, you know, he should be thanking Barack Obama every goddamn day.
Well, instead, he's going and undoing everything Barack Obama did.
He needs to get one of those hope posters, you know, the Obama hope poster, and to light a candle in front of it every day, thanking Barack Obama for providing him with an economy that's potentially going to save his fucking ass. Because, I mean, if it hadn't been for the Obama economy, this guy'd be out already. Yeah. This guy'd be impeached already. 45% now, Obama. Thank God, supporting impeachment.
You had to be so fucking great, Obama.
Yeah, I know.
This guy could ride on your coattails for so long.
Well, they're so busy bitching about Obama.
Obama!
That they don't realize that Barack Obama, well, you know, they painted the Obama economy as being this fucking disaster.
Yeah.
And again, it's completely counterfactual. And this goes back to abortion. This goes back to Ben Shapiro. This goes back to tariffs. This goes back to fucking everything. They're entirely counterfactual on everything, including the source of the decent economic numbers that we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
And the stock market, you look at the stock market, by the way, the stock market was rising and rising and rising throughout the Obama years. You can trace all of this back to the passage of the stimulus in March of 2009. And you see this gradual increase in the in economic growth, an increase in employment, an increase in the stock market. And then Donald Trump passes his stupid fucking tax cut bill. And then the stock market goes bananas.
Yeah.
For the whole subsequent year. It's been up. It's been down. It's been up. It's been down. So you can see this very smooth. And then as soon as Donald Trump does something to the economy, which is a tax cut thing, I mean, he hasn't done really anything for the economy other than cut taxes. And then everything goes chaos. Mm-hmm. Everything goes to fucking hell. That's how it works. That's how there's your Trump economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why it's as high as it is right now and dropping as of today, by the way. Mm-hmm. But the only reason it's that high is because it started that high. And it's going to be very difficult. And by the way, the stock market isn't the economy. It's just one of many indicators. The fact is that, you know, once you get to that point, it's really up to the spazzy white guys in lower Manhattan and how they're feeling about what Donald Trump is doing. And so that's going to, you know, that's going to be the main thing that's going to decide the fortune of whether the stock market goes up and down. And now they're reacting rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
To Donald Trump's fuckery on the trade war with vagina.
Vagina!
He was saying for China, right? But because of his accent, his Brooklyn accent, he goes, vagina!
Vagina!
He's like, vagina! So it comes out,
vagina!
Asshole. What an asshole. Meanwhile, James Comey says Mueller had enough evidence to convict Trump. Well, fucking thanks for saying that now.
Yeah, I know.
I think
fucking Comey.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I mean.
Well, meanwhile, you know, the New York Times jumped the gun a little bit on that Ukraine story. And you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think I saw something about this earlier.
Well, the Biden-Ukraine thing, which is still going to be a disaster for Biden.
Yes.
Because it doesn't matter what the facts are. Right. Donald Trump's just going to paint it however he wants to.
Benghazi, hello.
Yeah. So, but what the thing they jumped the gun about is they were saying something to the effect that an investigation had already started in Ukraine regarding this energy company that Hunter Biden was a part of.
Uh-huh.
And so, but it hadn't started. And now we're finding out that now it kind of starts. Giuliani is pushing Ukraine to start inquiring into Burisma, even after the Burisma investigation had ended, right? And it wasn't ended, and it hadn't ended because of Joe Biden's influence. It ended because it ended. They finished it, right? But now Rudy Giuliani wants them to reopen it so they can damage Joe Biden. Again, it's collusion in plain sight. It's like what they were talking about on Rachel last night.
Yeah.
You know, they went from doing it in secret in the 2016 election. And now that it's been sanctioned, sanctioned in a positive way. Now that it's been allowed by the Mueller report, they're just out there doing it. Thanks, Mueller. Now they're doing it in clear view. Yeah. Not even apologizing for it. Here's what we're doing. Rudy Giuliani goes to Ukraine and says, please investigate Joe Biden's son. Please, oh, please.
Yeah.
Because we need help in 2020. We need foreign help. We can't win on our own. So we need Russia. We need maybe China.
China.
China to help out. And Ukraine, if you can give us a hand, too. I mean, we've got money to give you. It's just unfucking believable. Just the hubris. They just don't give a shit. It's like, we're just doing all this. We're being crooks in plain view. Try to catch us. Nah, 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 nah. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Mick Mulvaney criticized Republicans for not informing him that Trump Jr. would be subpoenaed. Because that's the way things really work. I think they were informed. I think Donald Trump was informed of this 2 weeks ago. And again, they're just playing the victims. They're just playing the whiny diaper babies that they've always been. So there's that. Okay. Do you want to talk about... I'm not going to talk about the Avengers as as a movie because I'm
good because I'll be just taking a nap.
Well, there are still lots of people.
I know that a lot of people like the Avengers.
Well, there are still lots of people who haven't seen it yet.
Right.
So I don't want to get into any sort of review thing that it involves spoilers. But I will say this, that there are now complaints about Avengers Endgame. Mm-hmm. Complaints of fat shaming. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how exactly I'm going to address these complaints without spoiling one of the parts of the movie. It's not even really, it's not a plot point necessarily. It's just the condition of one of the characters.
You know, it's a spoiler coming up, so.
Okay, spoiler warning for just like, it's like a character description. That's mm-hmm. what I'm about to spoil here. So in case you don't want to know, maybe skip ahead 5 minutes in the show. You can do that. You can skip ahead in 15-second increments on your Patreon app.
Yeah, those little... Just so you know, because I don't think people understand what that is.
Yeah.
When you go to hit play, there mm-hmm. are these two little things that are 15 with a little circle and an arrow. So yeah. That takes you up 15 or back 15
yeah.
seconds.
So you can advance ahead 15 seconds or yeah. go back 15 seconds. So, okay. So here's the spoiler. Thor in Endgame... as a consequence of the snap that was in the previous movie, the snap by Thanos that made half of all living creatures in the universe disappear. As a result of the trauma of that event, of the snap that made all those people disappear, Thor became an alcoholic. Thor like retreated to some place in Norland or something. Where he's just drinking beer all the time and his body went to hell. So there's this whole thing in Endgame in which this guy who's known for his physical perfection, he's not even a guy. He's like a god. Thor is the god of thunder in the Marvel universe. But now he's like, he's overweight and he's doughy and he's a drunk, you know, and all these things. And so now this is being, I think, in my opinion, misperceived as fat shaming. Like they're using it as a point of comedy. And the point is not to say, ha ha ha, fat guy, ha ha ha. That's not the idea.
Yeah.
The idea is that guy used to be awesome and he knew he was awesome and he would always brag about how awesome he is. But now he's not so awesome because he's fat. Or he's not, they didn't even say the word fat. They didn't mm-hmm. even really attack his fat necessarily. They were just like, okay, well now he's become sloppy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, you know, it's just something that happens.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, just putting something in a script that makes somebody a certain physical
yeah.
shape is not a shame.
No.
It depends on how it's treated in the script. But if it's just that they've gained weight, that's not fat shaming.
No, it's not.
Or even stop taking care of themselves.
Well, right. And if it's someone, too, who's known for physical perfection and yeah. known to be up his own ass about, you know, the fact that he's a god and everything like that, acting, you know, hoity-toity and everything, then, you know, to a certain degree, you know, it's like, for example, like I think at one point Robert Downey Jr. calls him Lebowski. Mm-hmm. Because he's got like that Lebowski sweater on and the dark sunglasses and he's got the disheveled beard and the long sort of matted hair. Just looks like he looks like Lebowski in the movie. It's Thor Lebowski
yeah.
in the movie. And so, yeah, so there are going to be remarks about that. But again, there are other overweight characters in the Marvel Universe that there's never any fat jokes about. Like Peter Parker's best friend in the Spider-Man movie, the new Spider-Man movies, the ones that are in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. the Spider-Man's best friend is overweight. He's an overweight kid. But they're never like, oh, look at that fat kid. Right. Ha 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 ha. It's not, that just doesn't happen. It's the contrast of going from being this cut, bulky god, the god of thunder, to being Lebowski. And so obviously they're going to, you know, take little jokes about that, make little jabs about it. So no fat shaming. And by the way, a lot of the people who are saying there is fat shaming, and I confronted one of them in my comments on Facebook, hadn't even seen the movie.
Yeah.
And if you're going to pass judgment on the character of the creative team that made these movies, you have to at least see their work first before you criticize. Now, saying, okay, I'm a consumer of films and I can make whatever judgment I want based on doing my diligence to see if I even want to see this movie. Well, that's fine if it, like, you determine that superhero movies aren't your thing, or you don't like one of the actors in the movie, or it's too long and you don't have time, or you don't go to movies anymore, or you fucking hate superhero movies. That's a legitimate reason to not go see a movie. Or if a movie is given poor reviews and you say, I'm not going to bother. I'm not going to waste my time. But when you're judging the producers and writers and actors in a film, and judging them for being, in your mind, immoral or unethical or some sort of shaming, prejudicial, whatever you bigoted, then, to me, you have to see the movie. You have to see it if you're going to levy that kind of judgment. You have to see the scenes. At the very least, go to YouTube and watch the scenes if you can find them. And that would give you some sort of platform on which to allow criticism of that nature. But don't, you know, all right. That's about all I have to say about that. It's one of those things where someone's always got to come up with a complaint about everything. And it's just the nature of the internet age. It's the nature of Twitter. It's the nature of social media. We always got to shit on stuff that without any information as to whether or not it's the criticism is legitimate or justified or not. You know what I mean?
Yes. And since you brought up the movie that I didn't want to watch, I'll bring up the movie you didn't want to watch just because I want to say a little bit about it. I watched Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile on Netflix, and that was Zac Efron played Ted Bundy. Mm-hmm. And I heard about it online. I didn't even know it was made or anything, but some people on Twitter were talking about it and really praising Ted Bundy. And I see that it gets it's getting some mixed reviews, but it's getting really good reviews, or people don't like it. I thought it was great. I do have a problem with it. It's after I saw the film, I found out that there were certain things they kept out. I don't like that. Like, for instance, in the movie Misery, or I read the book and I saw the movie and I really love the movie, but in the book, because I love extra creepy, like the creepier the better for me. Mm-hmm. So like in the book Annie Wilkes would go into these fugue states and she would like cram all this food in her mouth and her fingers would be greasy and she would drink out of a 2-liter Coke bottle and it would be all smeared. So like when he, got out of the room, he saw this and it was described, and it's like, it's just so creepy, like food wrappers were everywhere. But in the movie, she was very neat. And I would have preferred to see the disgustingness of how she behaved when she was alone.
Neat and upset about Rocket Man.
Have right. you all got amnesia? They just cheated us. This isn't fair.
Well, and the other thing in the movie that they didn't do was after she would clean the house, she would make him drink the water filled with dirt and chemicals.
Yummy.
So I thought that was pretty creepy. So anyway, in this Extremely Wicked movie, evidently the reason I liked it, and let me get to this first, was because it came from two different perspectives, which was one, his girlfriend, longtime girlfriend, who did not want to believe that he was guilty. And then it came from his perspective. You never saw him doing anything. You never saw him, raping or hurting anybody. But you would see his perspective when he was accused of it or arrested for it, and how he tried to make people believe that he was innocent, and how he tried to make her believe that he was innocent, and how they really did have this love. It was like a genuine love. And so I thought it was so fascinating because it did not romanticize him in any way, but it did show that somebody like you know, I never thought Ted Bundy was good looking, but he was known for being good looking. But, you know, you've got this good looking man, and he could easily, he had all this energy and charisma, and women were drawn to him. So it's like on one, you know, on one part of his life, he was this loving man to this woman and her daughter, and he never hurt them, and he never would have hurt them. So, but then on the other hand, he was like this just brutal fucking murder. I mean, just disgusting and horrible things.
Terrible
that he
shit.
Did. Awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just your stomach turns and churns.
That's and that's the shit that I can't. That's why well, I didn't watch the movie.
And that's the thing, they didn't show it.
Yeah.
Except that you just know he did it. And so, but you, the only thing that you saw was at the very, very end, and it was just, it cleaned something up for you so you understood something. But outside of that one little thing, there was absolutely no violence in the movie whatsoever. It was just how he dealt with everything at, you know, coming at him. But I guess in real life, there were clues along the way, and they did not show that in the film. So I guess, you know, he would put these casts on and get, just like in Silence of the Lambs, when what's his name pretended that, you know, he was hurt and he needed help. So this is what Bundy would do, and he would
put her way in the back.
But he would, I guess she found plaster of Paris, and I guess there were a couple of times where certain things like a crowbar was missing, and it led her to question. So, but you didn't see that in the film, and I would have liked to see that perspective because it was real.
Mm-hmm.
But all that said, not knowing that when I went to see, I was so impressed with Zac Efron. I don't know him. I don't pay any attention to him. He's a younger guy. I don't know what movies he's been in. I think he's kind of like was known as like a bubblegum type act. Well, he really did a spectacular job. So there's my little review of that movie.
Yeah. And
some interesting folks, too. Why can I never remember this name? John Malkovich played the judge.
Malkovich. Yeah.
Malkovich. And there were a couple of other people in it that I was like, oh, that was interesting to see, you know. Different stars were in it that mm-hmm. were unexpected.
Yeah.
But all the acting was really fantastic.
Well, that's great. And I maybe on a different night I would have been into watching it. I just didn't feel like a serial killer thing that
right.
night.
Well, you know, but again, I just want to reiterate that this was not, there was no focus on the actual crime or violence.
And it didn't make Ted Bundy seem like a nicer guy than you would imagine?
No, not at all. Okay. It wasn't about, what it did was it showed that he could use his looks and his charisma to fool people.
Right.
But it didn't romanticize that. I think what, you know, one of the things, I think it was even said in the film or you know, at the end of the film, there was some footage of actual Ted Bundy when he was in court and stuff like that. And they showed you that it was like matched up perfectly, almost like with Bohemian Rhapsody. When you watched the concert,
I mean,
you could see that Bundy was using, like, he was shaking his hand at the judge and the judge scolded him for it. They had that in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think somebody had mentioned at the end in a real interview from real news footage that, you know, here you could have serial killers, we think of as these demonic creatures, and they are. But sometimes they're people you love and you don't even know it.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's so freaky.
Yeah.
That whole concept of just knowing someone for a long time and not even
and
realizing.
Then find, you know, I mean, some like
so I'm just going to ask you point by. Are you a serial killer? Are you? I just want to know.
You never know.
Shit.
I'll never tell.
Shit!
I thought that the idea of coming from her perspective and then from his perspective without any violence or, and you didn't even need it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm saying you need to have violence in movies, but when you watch, you know, even in, it was worse in Silence, way more in Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah.
Way more. But, you know, like I said, there was just one little thing at the end.
Well, with Silence of the Lambs, here's the difference. And there are obviously things like that I am perfectly happy to tolerate or perfectly happy to watch. And it's just the level of fantasy about it. Like Dexter, right. I'm totally fine with Dexter because
he's a fictional character.
Well, he's a fictional character. The events are fictional.
Right.
And he's actually going after evil people.
Right.
It's the real life shit that gets me.
Well, I have this fascination, and I know I'm not alone, but serial killers fascinate me because I can't understand what it is. I can only imagine that it's some kind of brain, like a weird cell formulation when you have these sociopaths. The only thing, like, I look at somebody like Jeffrey Dahmer, and he expressed legitimate Like he understood what he did was wrong. And he said, I need to be in jail because if I'm not in jail, I'm going to keep doing this.
Yeah. It's a severe mental illness. It's
right.
psychopathy.
But he recognized it. He wasn't a sociopath because he actually felt bad for what he did, but he would have continued to do it. And he knew that.
Well, he may have expressed that he felt bad, but he didn't feel bad.
Well,
you don't do that shit.
Well, he
and
didn't
then not
say that he felt bad. He said he understood what he did was wrong.
I see.
And that he understood that he needed to be locked up because if he wasn't locked up, he would keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was just so incredibly fascinating.
Yeah.
Doesn't make me feel sorry for him in that, you know, he was horrible and he fucking ate people.
It tortured them.
Tortured them and ate them.
That's the kind of shit that I can't deal with. I can't deal with torture. And even in a fantasy movie, I can't deal with any sort of torture.
No, I don't like torture either. Although the only thing that I could handle, and I still do it in a cringy, like I still cringe, is the Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, I can't deal with
my
that.
My mom can't deal with that either. She writes totally creepy shit and she can't watch that scene.
The scene toward the end.
Yeah, where, with the ear.
The ear, yeah. I can't deal with that. I can't deal with someone
for some reason I could handle it and I don't, I mean, I cover my face, but I peek through my fingers.
Yeah.
It's like makes me uncomfortable, but I can handle that. But yeah, as far as like, I won't watch those movies. The torture movies. I don't even know what they're called because I've never seen them.
Oh, like the Rob Zombie movies, like for example, House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah, but there's one that was really famous, and they did a couple of them. And of course,
the Saw movies.
Saw. Yeah. Thank you. I've never seen that.
I saw the first Saw movie, and you know what? It wasn't. Here's the thing. It was orchestrated by a serial killer. Like the Saw character or the villain in the Saw movies is a serial killer, but he doesn't actually directly do anything to the victims. Mm-hmm. He sets up these elaborate, you know, traps.
Isn't it still torture?
It's torture, but it's not the kind of torture where a person is tied down and the torturer is kind of dancing around and doing a thing and getting ready. Oh, what? I've got a crazy weapon here. What am I going to do with this knife? I could do just about anything. I could cut your dick off,
so
or
you're
I
like
could cut your nose
anticipating
off.
Anticipating the worst.
That's just it. It's the anticipation of what this crazy person's going to do next as the victim is tied down. Mm-hmm. There's something about that is so visceral and awful to me that I can't, even thinking about it terrifies me. And maybe, who knows why? But I just, there's certain things that I can't deal with. Like, for example, I can't watch Braveheart. At the end of Braveheart, Mel Gibson's character is tied down and tortured and executed. I can't deal with that.
I can't watch the Christ movie either.
Yeah, The Passion of the Christ.
I can't deal with that movie.
Which is just torture porn, for God's sake.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, the Rob Zombie movies are torture porn.
I hated that.
Also.
But yeah, I don't like that either. But there's just something about the serial killer mentality that is so fascinating to me.
On a completely different note, we watched, we finally picked it up. And I mentioned this on the Postmortem Show, but for those of you who don't listen to the Postmortem Show, listen to this show. We couldn't find Pump Up the Volume. Mm. We've been wanting to watch this movie for a while now. It's been a while since we've seen it. And I want to get prepped to do a Gen X podcast, maybe like a once a month thing. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to start out the first episode of the Gen X podcast is going to be a discussion of Pump Up the Volume.
That's
which is
not
one of
my
the,
favorite Gen X movie, though.
But it's one that I think hit a lot of different Gen X beats.
It definitely was very Gen X. I mean, I have my favorites.
Yeah.
But I would certainly include that movie in one of the movies that you need to see if you want to study Gen X.
Well, it's Christian Slater. It's got a lot of the Gen X mindset mm-hmm. in it, you know, sort of the anti-establishment, almost borderline nihilistic, cynical points of view.
Well, and then as you said, it's like, I mean, basically introduced podcasting.
Because the main character has a pirate radio station in his basement, which is completely implausible.
Right.
I mean, the technology was complete bullshit in the movie. Like, for example, it drove me nuts that he doesn't wear headphones.
Yeah.
Christian Slater's character doesn't wear headphones in the movie. And you have to wear headphones, otherwise you're going to get terrible, terrible feedback. But at the same time, it ends up that he becomes this icon. And he even has his own Ziggy Blue. I noticed that too.
There's lots of Ziggy.
Lots of things to say.
We love Ziggy.
Of course we do. And there are lots of things to say about Pump Up the Volume. And we're going to cover it all in the Gen X podcast. But I mean, one of the things I noticed was there was kind of a ringleader of the listeners who would show up at the football field where the reception was the best. And he would kind of orchestrate among the other listeners like, okay, here we go. He's coming on. He's going to come on. Sometimes he comes on for 5 minutes. Sometimes he comes on for 5 hours. And he's like, he knows everything there is to know. I was like, hey, look, he's got the Christian Slater had a Ziggy Blue in, in Bump Up the Volume. Someone who's like knows everything there is to know about the show. So that was fun to see.
Yeah, we're going to, I want to start watching. We also watched the Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears.
It's like
yeah.
the, between the 70s movies, because one of my favorite 70s movies of all time is Little Darlings.
Yeah.
I fucking love that movie. Cynthia Nixon is in it. And it's so funny because she's like this little blonde
flower
child.
We need to watch
child.
That one again.
I know, but we
got to
find
70s.
It. I think we watched it on YouTube because you can't find it anywhere. You can't even buy it on Amazon.
Yeah.
But it's really a good movie.
Oh, you know, there's an E! True Hollywood Story on Christy McNichol.
Yeah, we have to watch that too.
Christy McNichol. I had such a crush on Christy McNichol. And when I was like 7 years old.
She was so popular.
Yeah.
She was like, on that show Family. Remember?
She was like on the most popular. She was in the most popular shows and movies and everything at that time.
She was like the it girl.
Yeah, totally.
In the late 70s.
Such a big crush on Christy McNichol.
And then in Little Darlings, it was her and then it was Matt Dillon, who I was completely in love with.
Yeah.
And then it was, what's her name? Why can't I remember anybody's name? I'm just like getting older. Oh, O'Neill.
Tatum O'Neill.
I love Tatum O'Neill.
Yeah, right.
And I loved her so much in The Bad News Bears. And it's, you know, The Bad News Bears is so fucking, they would never make that today.
No
the
way,
kid, the
no
kids
way.
Use the N-word.
Tanner is like a fucking
yeah, Tanner is
bigot.
A MAGA.
Yeah.
He's a total fucking MAGA.
He's saying the N-word. He's saying the K-word. He's like every racial stereotype. He's blurting out all of those words.
And then there's this
words.
Like scene where Matthau was in the on the middle of the field and he just fucking
just
passes out because
drunk,
he's drunk.
Drunk.
And
all
it's
the
like,
time.
But it was so 70s. It was so raw and gritty.
Yeah.
And it was just, it really captures the feeling of that time. And I think it was like 77.
Yeah.
I think it was 77. Maybe it was a little, I can't remember, 78, but still it was such a great movie.
And it was kind of a movie. It wasn't necessarily a movie for kids.
Right. But kids loved it.
Yeah. But kids loved it. And it's just crazy that that was a movie that was partially marketed to kids.
Exactly. Cause I mean, it was full on. I mean, that Tanner was an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like full on MAGA.
Well, they would never. I mean, they did a remake of The Bad News Bears with Billy Bob Thornton a few years ago. And I'm sure it was. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I would. I don't even.
But I would wager that it's nowhere near the level of grittiness and
this
honesty.
This was like way gritty. And you know what? I would say anybody out there who hasn't seen that in a long time, watch it. You will not regret it.
I mean,
it's
entertaining. Jackie Earle Haley must have been 13 in the movie.
He looked like he was 10.
And he's smoking cigarettes.
And he's flicking them at people. Driving around on his motorcycle. Oh my God, it's so great.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Just a
so
great
fantastic.
Movie.
And, you know, I mean, I didn't realize after I had seen it as an adult, you know, of course, as a kid, you love it and everything. But when I saw it as an adult, because we watched it several years ago and then we just watched it again, it just blows my mind that it really holds up.
Yeah.
And the acting is superb. Everybody in it is fantastic. But when you go and watch it now, you're like, wow.
Yeah. And just again,
the way what they got away with would never fly these days.
Walter Matthau is just endlessly entertaining to watch. I always forget how funny he is. And without even really trying, I think it partially has to do with the fact that he's funny looking.
Yeah.
He's a funny looking guy. He looks like Nixon. If Nixon had a sense of humor, he'd be Walter Matthau. It's just like in that movie, he's hilarious, but again, darkly hilarious.
Yeah.
It's a dark. Bad News Bears is a dark movie.
It is.
Especially in the modern context. You look back at it.
But that's how it was. I mean, I remember the 70s. I was a kid in the 70s, and that's what it was like. I remember it like that, you know, I was reminded that it was like that because you kind of forget, you know, we evolve and we have different standards. And so you kind of roll along and you forgot. It's like, I wouldn't have even imagined that it was as gritty as it. But that's what I also like about Little Darlings, because the whole gist of that movie is they're at a camp and you've got Tatum O'Neill and Christy McNichol against each other.
Yeah.
Tatum is the rich girl. Christy's the not rich girl, who's like the street girl and smokes and everything. So they make this bet who's going to lose their virginity first. And spoiler, it's from the fucking 70s. So if you haven't seen it, too bad.
Yeah.
So Christy does have sex and lies about it.
Yeah.
And Tatum doesn't have sex and lies about it.
That's right.
And Tatum's, it's funny because Tatum is going after Armand Asante, who's one of the camp, and he's like so furry. He's so cute, but he's
miscast,
so furry.
Miscast. I think he was miscast in that movie.
Loved him. And I think that I think he was miscast because girls don't usually like men who are filled with hair and so manly looking. Like when I was a girl, I liked Sean Cassidy. I liked the younger men that looked like girls like Sean Cassidy.
Oh, I
or
see.
Leaf Garrett or something.
Pretty boys.
Yeah. I think, and I can't speak for all the little girls, but certainly Armand Asante was not on my radar when I was a teenager.
I think you have a little bit of a crush on John Mulaney.
No, not at all.
You don't,
but
really?
But I absolutely love him. But I don't have a crush. No.
Do you do you have a crush on Nads? Jerry Nadler?
A little bit.
A little bit. It's the jowls.
But I think John Mulaney, I bow to him. Yeah. I am so impressed with him.
Very funny guy.
I think he's
guy.
One of the funniest people that I've ever seen. And what I appreciate about him more than anything is that as you describe him as being like a little delightful,
mm-hmm.
but also got that dark side.
Oh, very dark.
And so that's what I like.
Yeah.
I like that he can be delightful and dark.
Yeah.
And I like that he says fuck.
Right.
Because when he says it, he says it.
Yeah. You don't expect him, for example, to admit that he used to do a lot of cocaine. You know, shit like that. Or that he's a smoker. And watch his Larry King interview. His interview with Larry King is actually really great. And also because you get to look at Larry King, who's now just melting into his chair. Just so fucking funny.
But you know who I did
he's
actually...
Like, he said, you know, at one point, John Mulaney... Larry King asked John Mulaney what one of his first celebrity crushes was. Who his first celebrity crush was. And it wasn't Christy McNichol. It was... what's her name from Waterworld? Yeah. Who's...
Oh, that woman.
Yeah. Who's the lead in Waterworld other than Kevin Costner?
I know that... I know her name.
I'm going to look it up, yeah, because I can't remember.
Well, I still have to say something about Armand Asante.
I started this story, and then I forgot the
Two
name
things.
Of the... Yeah, Jean Triplehorn.
Yes, her, okay.
Yeah, so she was... John Mulaney said, yeah,
well,
I was really into Jean Triplehorn in Waterworld. And Larry King goes, Waterworld was a bomb. And his voice is getting weird. Usually I would go, Waterworld was a bomb. Because Larry King used to sound like that. Now he sounds like an old man. His voice is gone. And so, so Larry King reacts by saying Waterworld was a bomb. As if the fact that Waterworld was a bomb would make Gene Triplehorn not look great in that movie.
Well, so, I was later on in life, in college, I had a typing class at El Camino College in Torrance, California.
El Camino.
And instead of doing whatever work assignment I had to do, I would literally, every day that I had that class, I would go and I would write about running into Armand Asante at the Chalet Gourmet, which was on Sunset Boulevard, and how, of course, we would have a relationship based on that run-in. And then it was funny because this woman that I knew, she was an actress. You've probably seen her in videos and movies and this and that. She's not like overly famous, but one of those people, if you saw her face, you might recognize her. Anyway, Armand Asante hit on her, and she was so completely flabbergasted by it and flustered that she didn't because later she's like, oh my God, he hit on me and I let him go. You idiot. And this was the same person who fucking had sex with Fabio. I'm like, you had sex with Fabio and you let Armand Asante go?
Yeah.
What is fucking wrong with you?
Even if it wasn't the Fabio, the fact that she had sex with someone named Fabio
but
is
it was
amazing.
The Fabio.
Yeah, the Fabio.
I mean, I asked her how he was and she's like, pretty much what you'd expect.
They need to bring back the name Fabio and Armand as names for
babies. I used to love Armand. Oh,
well,
my
here's,
God.
Here are the most popular baby names for 2018 while we're talking about names real quick. Girls' baby names, number 10, Evelyn, number 9, Harper, number 8, Amelia, number 7, Mia, very popular name, number 6, Charlotte, number 5, Sophia, number 4, Isabella, number 3, Ava, number 2, Olivia, and the number 1 most popular girl's name for 2018 was Emma.
Not surprising. You know what? I actually don't mind. I like all of those names.
Yeah, they're all great names. The boys' names, not so much. Number 10, Logan. Number 9, Mason. Number 8, Lucas. Number 7,
Lucas.
Number 7, Lucas is a good name. Elijah. I think that Elijah is also a good name. Yeah. Number 6, Benjamin. Number 5, Oliver. Number 4, James. Classic name there. Number 3, William. Another classic name. Number 2, Noah. And the number 1 name for 2018 for boys, Liam. As in
I don't mind those.
Liam
I think they're
Neeson.
Pretty good names.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe I instantly think of George Carlin. Do you ever see that George Carlin bit where he's talking about boys' names and how new boys' names are shitty and old, like the old boys? Well, here's George Carlin.
And I'm getting really sick of guys named Todd. It's just it's a goofy fucking name, okay? Hi, what's your name? Todd.
I'm Todd. And this is Blake and Blair and Blaine and Brent. Where are all these goofy fucking boys' names coming from? Taylor, Tyler, Jordan, Flynn. These are not real names. You want to hear a real name? Eddie. Eddie is a real name. Whatever happened to Eddie? He was here a minute ago. Joey and Jackie and Johnny and Phil, Bobby and Tommy and Danny and Bill. What happened? Todd. And Cody and Dylan and Cameron and Tucker. Hi, Tucker. I'm Todd.
Hi, Todd. I'm Tucker.
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks. And fuck Tucker's friend, Kyle. Yeah. There's another soft name for a boy, Kyle. Soft names make soft people. I'll bet you anything that 10 times out of 10, Nikki, Vinny, and Tony will beat the shit out of Todd, Kyle, and Tucker.
Of course, it's totally random. He's just picking names and saying those names suck. But it's just the way he does it. His word usage. Oh, God, what a such a fucking genius. Boy, would I love to hear what he had to say about Donald Trump. The Donald Trump administration.
Yeah, really. Oh, my God. I'm sure he's rolling over in his grave.
To have George Carlin and Ches Bezienza back right about now would be fucking amazing. You know, we were going back to, we were talking about, Three's Company at the top of the show. Yeah. And I noticed here that, as soon as, you know, remember I searched for Suzanne Summers to find out what her husband's name was. And I did a Google search for Suzanne Summers. The first image to come up is a naked picture of Suzanne Summers. Like, you can actually see her boobs in that picture. Well, there's a story, that was in Men's Health that I thought was just fucking ridiculous. Staring at boobs will help you live longer, says study.
Says men.
Yeah, says men. Exactly right. Like, this is, I wonder the sexual makeup of this study of these people. It's invasive and creepy, but according to new research, there may be some method behind the madness and weirdness. Experiencing pleasant emotions can help individuals make better decisions about their health, says a recent report published in the Archives of Internal Medicine. The research tracked 756 people who had either coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, or asthma. In the study, everyone wrote down personal health goals, but only half of the subjects were encouraged to think of positive thoughts when they got up in the morning and make regular self-affirmations throughout the day. After a year, positive thinking and pleasant thoughts, brought about perhaps by staring at a pair of breasts, had a powerful effect on health choices. More than half of the patients with coronary artery disease increased their physical activity versus 37% in the control group who were not asked to write down positive thoughts in the morning. So, you know what? This is just a thing about positive thoughts, and then Men's Health spins it into a boob story. Because everything sucks. Speaking of shit that sucks, short shorts for men are coming back.
Oh, no.
Because I'm just not allowed to buy clothes anymore.
Oh, no.
I've got, like it or not, I've got long legs. And now that short shorts are coming back, I'm just more or less fucked.
Well, you know what? Just ignore it. I can't even deal with the pants situation for men right now. I don't understand... why anyone thinks these like really tight at the bottom and loose at the, it's like,
yes,
men, you know, I had a girlfriend who said something like she didn't like men who looked like they had big hips. Well, these kinds of pants make you look like you have big hips even when you don't. I don't understand.
Yes, that's
what
right.
The deal is.
I went to, did I tell this story on the show? I don't remember if I did or not, but I went to a sporting goods store. I'm not going to plug the name of the store because they're not paying me to do it. But I went to the sporting goods store because I needed sweatpants to wear to the gym. And finding any pants that are 36 inseam is just an impossible task for me. You can't find 36 inseam pants anywhere. It fucking sucks. So I got to like order shit on the internet or get things tailored. It's just a pain in the ass. But foolishly, I went to the sporting goods store to buy a pair of sweatpants thinking, well, maybe they'll have some that are in my... Because every once in a while, I luck into a 36 inseam somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I found one pair of sweatpants that I could deal with the color of them. And they happened to be the proper length. So I went to the dressing room and put them on. Well, the first thing is I could barely get my feet through the bottom part of them. I had to like sit down and like
they do it with women's pants too.
Pull them through.
I hate them.
The tiny hole. It's like that SNL sketch the other night. We're just talking about how pants or clothing is just holes.
Yeah, right.
It's just holes you put your head through and your arms through and your legs through. But that was the case. I couldn't put my feet through the fucking holes at the bottom of the pants. And then once I finally were able to pry the bottom part of the pants on, I hike them up and there's like, suddenly it's like pants for a different person.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's like pants for John Goodman or something.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. I mean, they do that with women's pants. It is not flattering on the way I'm shaped.
It's just all this fabric. And then just the crotch is like down and around my knees.
Yeah. It's just, it looks bad. I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't understand why.
And the women's pants are very similar in that everything is pegged in at the bottom and then loose at the top. And it, again, my shape, it is not flattering.
Yeah,
I have a very I have very big bones and wide shoulders, broad shoulders. So I need to have some kind of either a scoop neck or a V-neck. And I went shopping a couple of months ago because we were going to go to that play. And I thought, well, I'm going to go look for some. We went to see A Christmas Carol at the Ford's Theater.
Right.
So I thought, well, I couldn't find one fucking thing. I was at Macy's. I was at a whole bunch of different stores and everything, the way that it was cut, I look like a linebacker. I look 25 pounds heavier. It's just not flattering. I like simple, basic clothes. And I like to have, like I said, a scoop neck or a V-neck. Try to find that now. It's so difficult.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
I feel wait it out.
And, you know, it's hard to complain. No one weeps. I always say this. No one weeps for the tall people.
Right.
But the fact is,
well, everybody, you know, they make clothes for this certain small group of people.
Right.
And what's really upsetting now is that they've gone crazy with what they determine as large and extra large.
Right.
It's like you have to, sometimes I'm 6 feet tall, and while I'm not as thin as I would like to be, I'm certainly not obese, but sometimes the only thing I can fit in because of the way that my shoulders and hips are is like a double X.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've never in my life, I still fit into, I basically take between like an 11, 12.
Yeah.
That's about what I take. Never in the history of my life was that an XX.
Mm-mm.
It is now.
Yeah.
Go to, you know, especially the less expensive clothing stores. Sometimes I just like to get summer tank tops at, you know, some of these little stores that don't have, you know, they're not brand name stores or anything like that. But, you know, you can get that, like, you know, tank tops for like $5. And I like to get a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
And it's like XXX. What are you kidding me?
Yep.
I've never, again, I'm not as thin as I used to be, but it's not, I mean, I only went up one size.
I know. And it is with me, I have to go to like XXX to get sleeves that fit. And then, the actual shirt part is like gigantic. The actual part of the shirt that goes over my torso is just like a tent. Just to get arms or sleeves that go all the way down. I want to get the holes.
So then I guess we just have to start walking around naked.
I think so. I think that's a great idea. Like we do around the house. Just expand that out to, you know, going to the store, going to our parents' house naked, which is my dick shaped like a banana and disguised that way too. All right. Well, on that note, we will wrap up today. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for subscribing on Patreon. Have a great weekend. And by the way, you can listen to Kimberly's podcast at patreon.com/startmeup. Make sure you support her over there.
Yeah, we had a good show. Let me just say, on Wednesday, I talked with Lorraine Devon Wilkie. She's fucking fabulous. We had a great conversation, and it's like, to get us to shut up, I'm like, okay, we have to stop talking now.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I have to... You know, anyway,
go talk
we had
to
a
Alyssa.
Lot to. No. I was just saying that Lorraine and I
right,
had a
right.
lot to say. Anyway,
that's the best kind of podcast to do.
Yes.
All right. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, in New York City, you never came to call out the evening to admit my mistake. Crosses in my mind that the future may find you'll be worried at a different gate.
help but wonder what was to blame for that cold Kansas evening when you never came. Here's to the journey that was not ours today.
Trump is a fucking idiot.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are
hers and hers and his.
Please company too. Come and dance on our floor.
Come and dance on our floor.
Take a step that is new.
God bless the United States.